The Upland Nomads podcast is brought to you by two guys that share a common passion, chasing birds and following our dogs through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world, the uplands. Join us while we have in-depth conversations with others from all over the country that enjoy and share the same passions as us. Welcome to the Upland Nomads podcast.
Want to know about you? I don't know. Welcome back to another episode of the Upland Nomads. We have Jared. I'm gonna probably butcher your last name. Cardona.
Yep, you nailed it.
I nailed it. I got a text today about butchering a guy's name on our last podcast that released today. So, Jared, do you want to just tell everybody where you're coming from? We are.
Yep. Just a bum that lives in the uplands. Follow my dog around from September to February. Coming from Omaha. I used to train outside of Denver for a kennel, and then I moved back home and just get my life figured out here now, and gonna do a little bit of training here for myself, and just now getting my pigeon coop started. So got to wait for them suckers to be homed, and then I should be up and running here in a little bit.
How many dogs do you have, Jared?
I got three of my own. I got a five. She's five. No, she's six now. Just turned six at the end of January. I have a four-year-old and a nine-month-old. Yeah, like a nine-month-old that I just kept out of this last litter I had this last summer. So she's been fun this last year. Different experience raising your own litter for sure. And raising your own pup from birth. It's a different progress. That's for sure.
But you don't want to keep every pup when you,
no, definitely not. When that 8 weeks comes around, you're like, it's about pickup day. Come get your dog.
Do you want your dog any earlier?
Right. Cleaning up plenty of poop, but it was fun to do my first litter. I mean, a huge learning experience, and like I learned a ton doing it.
What all goes into like raising a litter of pups?
Oh man, where do I start? It's everybody that says it's super easy or anything like that. You're fooled because it's not. I mean, it is constant. I'd say the first couple weeks are easier just because they're on mom and like you ain't got to really, I mean, you're just monitoring them, just make sure everybody's getting getting enough milk. Everybody's doing great. Nobody's getting sick or anything really. And then when they get off mom's milk and they can start actually eating solid food, that's when you are cleaning up so much poop. It is unbelievable. And it's just like, God, every hour you're going in there, you're cleaning up poop. It's just like, God dang, come get your dang dog.
So if you want to have a litter of puppies and think it's going to be easy, don't.
Yeah. No. It's a great experience to see them. Like now I get pictures from owners that I sold to, and like, it's awesome to see them out in the field, and you're like, okay, that was definitely worth like my time and effort. But in the moment you're like, oh boy, this is a lot of work.
How many pups did you have?
She had 10.
Oofta.
Yeah, so I also didn't get lucky with the smallest litter, my first litter, and got thrown right into the freaking fire of 10 pups. So
I say, what is like the average usually first litter? I'm sure it varies.
Yeah, a lot of people, I don't know, a lot of people I talk to said 6 and 8 pups usually. 10 is like a bigger litter. But I mean, I've heard of some people even having up into the teens. I'm like, I couldn't imagine having 13 or 14 dogs.
I said, no, my dog's mom had 7 both times.
No kidding.
Yeah. But even then, could not imagine. There were seven pups all the time. We went there both times, and it was like, holy crap. It's a lot of dogs. Yeah.
No, it's a lot of work. But it's fun, especially seeing, like I said, seeing pictures of the dogs doing what they were bred to do, and you see them out all across. I sold one pup up in Montana. I sold another one, a couple in like northern Colorado, one to in Idaho. So it's cool to see like pictures, you know, coming from all over the country basically of your dogs.
Try to make sure they go into hunting homes or at yeah. that point.
Yeah. So basically I didn't sell to anybody that was a non-hunter.
Yeah.
You had to at least, you know, want to take the dog out a few times.
You don't have to do
it. I might have missed this, but what kind of dogs did you say they were?
I got short hairs.
Okay.
Yeah, sir. Nice. I got one of them from here, and then one of them out in Colorado, and then I just kept one out of this last litter. So
all yours are they all just like straight litter?
No, I got all roan and patch.
I mean, one. Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, roan, not liver.
Yeah, and then I got two liver ones. I'm kind of attracted to the liver. I don't know what it is about it, but I love like the liver look. It's when they're on point, it's just like, oh gosh, that's sexy.
I like the ticks.
Do you?
Yeah. What, Riggs
what, is what makes you attracted to them instead of like a straight liver?
I don't know. It was always been the ticking for me. Yeah. I guess. No particular reason. I don't think there's any. I say because my Riggs has got quite a bit of patch, but Cash is pretty much straight ticked. So,
yeah. Would you ever get a short hair, Michael?
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah.
I don't know about in the upcoming future, but sometime in the future, yeah.
Yeah. We're trying.
Trying. White sends me about two dogs a week.
I told him he can just have my youngest one go live at his house.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll make it easy for you. Right. This dog that likes to lay on the couch and likes to snuggle.
Yeah.
And you'll hook your wife right in. So, yeah. Jared, getting into your hunting background, yeah, who got you started in the uplands?
So really, I didn't have growing up. I didn't hunt much. I played travel hockey growing up, so hockey season is in the same season that hunting season is. So you can't. I was gone like every weekend, or it seemed like every weekend. So, I would go out maybe a handful of times with my dad, here and there. But really I didn't get into it until I was completely done playing hockey after junior hockey, which would have been, 2016, 2017. And then I moved home and then didn't have hockey to play during the winter. And I got a bird dog right away when I moved, back home and got my own place. And, after that, it was basically, I just, following around the bird dog, you know. I just wanted to give her the best chance to do what she was bred to do, and I had fun doing it, so I was just gonna follow her around. And so basically I didn't hunt anything else besides a pheasant until probably after Remy turned one, so it would have been only like 4 or 5 years ago. So I haven't been at this like for a crazy long amount of time or anything like that. But once I got hooked, it was all doors are off.
Say hook, line, sinker, you're
yeah. On. Right.
So what are you mainly targeting when you go out?
Are you talking like cover or
no, just birds. Any like species of bird, like species. Pheasants, quail, stuff like that.
I would say when I first started, I was like all about hunting pheasants just because I'm obviously from Nebraska and it's huge here. But after training dogs a little bit and like hunting pheasant, everybody knows they just will run to the end of the world. It's not the greatest thing for a pointing dog. So I started getting into quail hunting. I did do a little bit of quail hunting, not a ton before. So I like to hunt quail. I would say my favorite species to hunt is quail, but I will chase grouse, prairie grouse in the early season. If it's not 100 degrees and I'm sweating my balls off, I'll, go chase a grouse around the sandhills, but I'll basically target anything.
Have you completed the Nebraska Slam then?
Yeah. I did that. Not last year, 2 years ago, I did it. In one season, and that's what's nice about Nebraska is there's, it's so diverse once you get, you know, a couple hours outside of, Omaha that you could shoot all four species within probably, I'd say, no more than an hour and a half driving. I mean, you can shoot all four species in one place. You know, there's a couple places that you could shoot all four.
And the four is what? Prairie chicken,
sharptail,
pheasant, and bobwhite.
Yep. And so it's pretty awesome.
Solid mixed bag.
Right. It's pretty awesome though. And we're only drive 2 hours and you can get into four different species like that.
Right. Yeah, we got three in North Dakota. I guess we technically have four upland species. If you count their very small rough grouse population.
Yeah, and that's one thing I need to still check off is I need to get a rough grouse and a spruce grouse.
You already got the woodcock?
I did not get a woodcock. I need a woodcock as well, but I also need a ptarmigan and a mountain quail. So
you're up and slam.
Yeah, I got a few to knock off here this next season or the next few seasons that are like bucket list birds, but we'll get there when the time comes.
Are mountain quail, they say, like the toughest ones to the...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never hunted them. I've never targeted them. So we're going to see, but,
I said, they definitely look like besides, Merns, they're really freaking pretty birds.
Yeah. They look crazy pretty. But it's just, you got to go so far. I got to go so far from where I live to shoot them. It's
right.
I think it's going to be like 30 hours from the research I was doing, 20, at least 20. It's like, yeah. Man,
that's like going sage grouse hunting from up here. It was 16 hours.
Really?
And I hate driving, so
yeah,
I can handle driving like 4, 5, 6 hours. Like that's
fine. Yeah. See, I don't mind it. So I mean, I'll drive and I'll hop in a car and I'll take off down to Arizona, and it takes 21 hours, and I'm like, whatever. But I mean,
going out there is always.
Oh yeah, right.
Going out there, like I didn't sleep a wink. We left at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we didn't get out there until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And I didn't, everybody slept in the pickup besides me. I slept maybe like half hour.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, why did I? And I was like, well, ride home. We had to split it up in 2 days because
the grind like getting back.
Grind getting back. We're like, this freaking blows.
Yeah.
And then we lose that hour too when we come back. So,
right. Makes it seem even worse.
Right. Right, the drive up home always sucks, and you're like, I gotta go to work on Monday. The fun's over. Wouldn't trade it for the world, though. And I say Wyoming was a blast. I'd do it again if it wasn't so hard, like far away.
Right. Yeah. I always go back and forth with whenever I go down to Arizona. It's the same way. It's like I love going down there, and the trip's great, but God, legging it 24 hours there, 24 hours back sucks.
Yeah, you had quite the truck problems too. It looked like.
Oh man, yeah. Don't even get me started on that truck because that thing's been the thorn in my side for the past 2 years. But yeah, we what happened to start it? I had a flat tire, and it wasn't even that flat. So it was like I looked at it and it was like low. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, maybe I should replace it. I'm going down to the, I'm like, you know, I'm in the dirt roads and
right.
this thing. So I'm like, yeah, I should probably replace it. I was going into town later that day. We were down Mearns hunting. And so I jacked it up, threw the spare on. And I noticed when I put the spare on that four of my 8 lug nuts were cracked.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, I'm way down south by the border. I mean, I'm way down south.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I'm just going to ride it out and see. I'm just going to hunt for half the day. And then once I get back into town, I'll just deal with it. Once I get back into town, whatever. And so I just cranked on those lug nuts as tight as they'd go. And we went out hunting for half the day, shot a couple Mearns, went back, turned around, got our truck packed back up and packed up camp and headed into Tucson to go get a hotel for the night because we were giving the dogs a couple of days break. And just 65 miles an hour on the highway, that sucker comes bailing off the truck, just loses wheel and tire and drops it on the rotor and just drags me, and of course I got like 3 feet of road on each side of this highway. I can't even like barely pull over, and I'm just like riding this rotor, quarter mile down the road. I'm like, Jesus Lord, please just help us. So I got it pulled over, and then ended up calling AAA, and what was it? They couldn't take passengers. That's what it was. And the guy wouldn't tow my truck with my dogs in the dog box. And so he's like, I can leave you guys here on the side of the road, but I don't know what you want me to do. I can't take your truck with the dogs in it, and I can't take either or you. And so the state trooper that was with us, he just basically was like, well, I'm not going to leave you guys out here. So load up the dogs in the back of the truck and load in, and we're going to take in 30 miles into Tucson. Homie just loaded us up and drove us 30 miles into Tucson.
So was your rotor shot then too? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had to replace, what was it? That rotor, the caliper pads, the whole shebang there.
Just please, there's just one side, I guess.
Yeah. But so then that was the start of the truck problems on that trip. So then I got, we got done. It was only a day in the shop. They fixed it next day. I was like back on the road. I was like, great. This, you can't ask for much more in a situation like that.
Right.
So I got out, went out and shot some desert birds for the next few days. And then, we were heading home, and we got, mind you, I'm going from Arizona to Colorado, probably 900 miles.
Yeah.
I get 30 miles outside of where I'm staying and from home, and my truck gels up. It's negative 30 out, and my truck gels up, and I'm stranded at 2 a.m. Dead truck after I just drove 900 miles back home. I'm like, are you shitting me?
Dang diesels.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a pain. That's for sure.
Oh.
Buy your anti-gel, kids.
I got a gasser.
Yeah, if I could do it all over again, I'd definitely go back to a gasser.
Yeah, especially almost diesel's actually almost the same price as gas right now. So
yeah,
diesel's going down, gas going up.
Right.
But they'll put that summer blend in. Diesel will be like $4.50.
Yep.
No, I remember seeing this story on online, loading the dogs up in the back of the cop car.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the guy was a gem about it too. He obviously didn't want to do it, but he wasn't going to leave us out there. So I was just like, man, I don't really have another option. I mean, I could Uber these dogs 30 miles into town if you want me to, but I don't know how the Uber driver's going to like that either.
You're good. Yeah. I mean, it's probably not the worst thing I've had in the backseat of a cop car down on the border of Arizona.
Yeah, no kidding.
So So getting into dog training, did you, before you went and worked for a kennel, did you work for anybody else?
No. So I did here and there. I trained, you know, buddy's dog, trained my dad's dogs, you know, uncle's dogs, just family or, you know, friends. Never had the opportunity to get my hands on like a number of dogs in a day or in a month. So that was one thing that I really looked forward to working at a kennel. It was like, I was going to see so many different dogs and get to handle so many different dogs, so many different breeds, that I got a lot of experience doing that. But before I never trained any dogs besides, you know, my friend's dogs and my own. Not professionally, anyways.
Mm-hmm. When you're training professionally, like that kennel, is it strictly bird dogs or is it other dogs for like behavior?
We did have a little bit of obedience dogs. The kennel I was working at, he tried to stay just hunting dogs specifically, but if he, you know, if he had an extra kennel or something and there was a obedience dog that needed to come in for just obedience, we would take it and, you know, do this, run it through our same obedience program that we would a bird dog, but just the obedience side of things.
So working with like different trainers, they all like a method, or like everybody had their own method or.
Yeah, that's one thing that I learned in dog training. Is everybody has their own method. It seems like everybody wants to have their own method and wants to coin their own method, but if it works, it works, right? I'm not gonna try a different method on a dog that this method's working on if I don't have to. You know, but if something else is gonna work for this dog and it's not clicking for what I usually do 80% of the time and something else will work, well, I'm going to do what's working for the dog. I'm not going to just try to hammer my program or my method that I want to work just because it's my method. I just basically react to how the dog's, you know, you just watch what the dog's doing and kind of base your training off that.
Are there like certain breeds of dogs that are tougher to train than others?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I mean, obviously you hear about the Vizslas being a little softer. I'd say Vizslas are a little softer. And then you got, you know, the high drive freaking draughts and wire hairs that would, I mean, they'll kill anything. Oh, squirrel, bunny, you know, they're going after, you're trying to tone them off anything. So I would say, yeah, I mean, it's definitely breed. I mean, a breed has a huge thing of dog's temperament, how the dog's going to work. But that doesn't mean you're going to get something different, you know, out of you might get a close working Vizsla or, you know, a Vizsla that has a crazy amount of drive instead of being a little bit softer to where that's where I think, a lot of people don't like. A lot of people want, like I was saying earlier, they want that method to work and they aren't like watching like, okay, this dog is not responding to this type of training and I should just maybe try something else. They want their method to work. And sometimes they're so stuck in that method that it's just like, man, that's not training a dog. You're trying to force a dog to do something rather than train it or teach it.
Mm-hmm. I said, I know what I've had like belly collar. Like I tried doing belly collar because I did it with Riggs. Tried doing it with Cash. Cash did not like belly collar. So yeah. we just did not do belly collar.
Yeah.
Because he just freaked the fuck out every time we tried to put one on.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's some dogs can't handle pressure like that. And I mean, that's the thing is like, you got to know your dog going into a situation like that, right? You got to know that, oh, this dog might be a little softer, so he's not going to take as much pressure as.
Right.
That'll run through a fence for a one pigeon.
I got that. I got I got the one, the oldest one. He'll go through the river fence to,
yeah,
get a pheasant. But yeah, but then Cash, I could nick him with the collar, and it'd have to be like on the toughest, like the highest one too, for him to get a reaction. It's like,
right, what
the
hell? Yeah.
It's like, dude, just come back.
Yeah.
Hey, I wasn't gonna get a GPS collar for him like his first year as puppy, like, because I got him in June, and he was like not even five months old when I went to Montana, and I was like, he doesn't need a GPS, it'll be fine. And he was fine in Montana, and then I got him home, and all of a sudden he was here to the other end of a 80-acre field, and I was like, holy shit.
Yep.
He has like, he's 300 yards away right now, at least. Yeah,
that is one thing that I will say is, like, I'll never run my dogs. Even how good I know them, how much I trust them, I'll never run my dogs without GPS. Just, right. There's one bunny that runs by, and you're like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, they've gotten pretty good about it. I think it helped that there was a bunny at my in-laws' farm. So I was always like, on the collar, like, we don't need to freaking go and jump on the bunny's cage. Like,
yeah.
And they just sit there and point it in the shop for like 15, 20 minutes on end. It's like, it ain't going anywhere. And then all of a sudden the bunny would like move to the other side of the kennel, and then all of a sudden hell would break loose. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I've heard our setters like can be softer on the softer side too. I've heard that too. Are they
with my? I've had a few that are a little soft. I mean, I wouldn't say they're crazy. So they're not crazy soft. They run huge.
Yeah, I say when you're talking soft, what do you mean by that?
I'm talking like collar pressure, so like, you know, the number on the collar, so like, and if I'm just saying like pressure of when I'm place training you, like if I am like trying to keep you on the place board and I'm just putting my hands out like this, like, are you like super reactive to me trying to give body pressure to you, like keep you on the board with just my hands, like are you super reactive to that? Just little things like that. I try to cue off of like their, you know, watching their ears and their tail. Like if their ears and their tail are up and wagging, then you obviously, you know, they're happy. You know, if they're tucked tail and their ears are tucked, it's like you're not having fun during this training session or whatever we're doing, you know.
Yeah. There, now people know what soft means, so they don't think we're talking about their weak.
Yeah.
What are like the biggest, like as a first time trainer, what are like the biggest mistakes or takeaways that you've had?
I would say biggest mistakes. I mean, everybody's had their first bird dog and a fishing pole on put a wing on a fishing pole and done the whole little game of fishing your bird for your dog. And I mean, that works. I mean, everybody had, like I said, everybody has their own way. If you're training, you're getting it done one way or the other. Obviously there's better processes to that. I don't do that anymore, but now that was back when I was living in an apartment. Didn't have a pigeon coop, didn't have, you know, access to birds, didn't know where to even start to get birds. But I would say if you're training a dog for the first time, get your hands on birds. Whether you know a place that you can go put them on wild birds. Like now I'll even like on the weekends, if I have, you know, an extra couple hours, I'll run down to the place that I know is holding a couple coveys of quail here. And I'm like, I'll go run my dogs in wild quail because there's nothing better than wild birds for your dog.
Right.
But I would say, obviously, just get as many birds as you can. Like I was a weirdo, and I was living in a townhouse, middle of Omaha, Nebraska, with my first bird dog, and didn't have a way to have a pigeons or chucker or quail. So I built myself a little chucker pen that I could keep half dozen chucker during the week, and go rip out and train Remy, you know, whenever I had an extra 45 minutes and I could have a way to hold my chucker, and I had it right on the front porch of my townhouse. you just gotta get around, you know, little things like that, but we made it work.
Yeah, man, you gotta make whatever work. I'm grateful we got plenty of wild birds next right. town. I can go less than 10, like 10 minutes, less 5 minutes out of town, and I can be into wild birds.
Yeah.
Sharpies and Huns, which I think Huns are a good one for puppies too to mess around with.
Yeah. Any wild, any bird, man. That's what I always say is like, any bird is a good bird contact. Your dog's learning something, every wild bird, because, I mean, they're wild. That's how they're going to react when you're out there hunting. It's not a pen-raised bird, and you cannot control the scenario every time.
Right. Yeah, I've done pen-raised. Or like, we've gotten pigeons and chucker and whatnot, and it's different, especially with, like, the older dog. It's like, he's like, this is kind of stupid.
They definitely get to know
this. It's like, this is easy, like,
right? They get to know the game for sure.
And the puppy, he just had a hell of a time with it. He thought it was the greatest thing ever. But the oldest one, he was like, okay, I pointed it, like,
right.
This thing smells really bad.
yeah
no I just started, like, last year I was like, yeah, I could go and buy pigeons again, and we could do that just so I have some, like, kill contacts, but or kill birds. But I was like, Cash saw probably 1,000 freaking birds his
right
first year out, like, and Riggs is 4 years old, so, like, he doesn't need that. So
yeah,
I mean, he probably does, but I was like, well, wild birds are going to teach him way more than what a pigeon on a freaking foot trap is going to do. So
right, yeah, I agree.
Especially like with Huns too, like. That's the one I like to get them on the most, because I know there's a couple coveys, a few different spots I like to go to. And they can't get too close. Like, can't get too close up and on them, so it teaches them just a little bit that, like, hey, can't get right up in their face. Like, we got to give them just a little bit of space.
We're not going to let you crowd them.
Right. That's the way it seems, anyway.
Yeah.
I say we found that, like, it took Riggs a long time to figure Huns out, and finally he's, like, the points he does have on Huns have been super nice. Speaking of, he's right at my door. It's knowledge training out on your own. Where are you going to be training at?
My in-laws. My fiance, her family, they got two farms up north of Omaha here. One's that got like 160 acres with a little cabin on it. They kind of use it like a camping little spot property for their family. They got a nice big pond on it that they stock with catfish and bass and, I can train out there. That's up in Mondame in Iowa. And then I got another farm that's like 70 acres. It's 10 miles down the road in Logan, Iowa. And that's where that schoolhouse that I've been posting my pigeon coop up. That's where that's
at. Yeah, let's get into the schoolhouse, because that's that's quite the pigeon coop.
So it's just an old schoolhouse that's been sitting on property since the 1800s. And It's still got, you know, the, what do you call it? The fireplace. And it's just a one room schoolhouse. It's got two little rooms on the front that I finished out one room. Well, didn't finish it, but boarded it up, make sure nothing could get in there, and, put my pigeons in there, and yeah, it's going to start training out of there. And hopefully, because I got I already have like probably 40 or 50 acres of CRP there that are cedars and CRP. That's it's already set up. Basically, I could just run dogs immediately right out of that schoolhouse. So,
gonna put the dog runs right on the schoolhouse, or
We might. I don't know.
Or just pour a slab and.
Yeah. We're still trying to decide. Me and the fiance, we actually went and looked. There's another, we're trying to find obviously find a house to live in. And so we're looking at like acreages, and there was an acreage that was right down the road there, yesterday that had like a Quonset on it. And I'm like, man, maybe I just wait until we buy something and see if I could just build the kennel at my place instead of having it out there. And, so we're still trying to see what's coming of that, but we're looking for an acreage relatively close to here, and we're in the process looking for that, but you know how that goes.
Right. Thought you were buying a camper.
Yeah, I thought I was too. We're so undecided, man. We go back and forth. We live very, what do you call it? Spontaneous. Like we, you know, it's just, if one idea sounds great, we'll just like, whatever, let's roll with that.
Roll. I don't think I could get the wife to go live in a camper.
Yeah, it was, dude, honestly, like, so we had a small house before I moved into a camper, and I thought moving from a house to that, she was going to like just hate it and be done with it. But she was looking at campers just the other day. Like, she's all about the camper life, man. She really enjoys it. And I really enjoy it. It keeps life very simple. It's nice.
It does. You get the stuff you don't need out, and you don't have all this, this crib and that shelf. And
right. You got bird dogs and dog food.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn dog food. You feeding Luxic too, or?
Yeah. Yep. I think it's the best food on the market, honestly.
I think so too. I've been feeding it for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Whenever Pheasant Fest was in Omaha, that would have been 3 years ago now. 2021, was that it?
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
Tried it. It worked out pretty good with samples that we gave Riggs, because he always had like upset stomach. Yukonuba gave him diarrhea. Karina gave him diarrhea.
Yeah.
That was their big thing. It was like the poop will be like
right
solid.
Yeah.
And it does. Especially it could sometimes probably be too solid.
Right.
If they don't have much water, I didn't drink much water. And I've had him where he's like grunting. I was like, oh, you're right. Like
you're like, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah. It's a big turn. Yeah. So I still can't get over the schoolhouse. That was do you have to like regulate with pigeons? Do you have to regulate heat or anything?
No, see, pigeons are like flying rats. I mean, when it gets cold, I will give them a heat lamp. But unless it's like in the teens, I mean, y'all are on your own. They're flying rats.
I mean, you go trap some more. So
yeah, I do have real homers, so like they are real homing pigeons. But I mean, they're hardy birds, man. Like
yeah,
I had them before. Like I was saying, I didn't even have when I was living in Arlington. I had them in like a literal dog kennel. And I just put like tin around the outside, and I was just like, there you guys go, and just hope that they survived. And I mean, that taught me a lot about pigeons. I'm like, yeah, you guys are hardy. Like, you put one heat lamp in there, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. So who do you get homers through?
There's a couple guys that race pigeons in Omaha here that have homers, and so nice. Yeah.
So that would be the way to go. If you actually were serious about it, it was just getting homers instead of going to trap and kill pigeons.
Yeah. No, I get homers and they fly back. And I had some before I moved out to Colorado in Arlington too. And yeah, real on. It's nice. They fly back and you don't have to
caught spend any money to train your dog.
Right. Just a starter pistol, I suppose.
Right. Right. Yep.
Right. I thought about getting a freaking starter pistol just for like our wild bird walks. Just so I was like, or else I'm really not doing like, yeah, they're going on point and pointing birds, but that's just fun for them. They're not like any residual. Yeah. Like, they're like, well, usually dad's shooting like if we do this. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not just out here a free run.
I think a structured run is better than just a free run anyway. Cause at least they're like, okay, like
we're out here.
Found it. Yeah. Like, oh, he missed again, whatever.
I feel that.
And it's just not like, oh, we can go. Oh, dad's not carrying a gun. So we can just go through these birds if we want to. Or
yeah.
Cause that's how I feel like some free runs go sometimes, but it also doesn't help. It's like rolling 40 every day if we're out running.
Right.
What's the best advice for someone getting their first dog and like DIY in their own training?
Like I said earlier, you got to get birds. That's the number one thing I would say is, figure out somebody that either consistently has birds that you can just go buy some from, or find somewhere you can trap pigeons. Be the weirdo with a pen in the front on your townhouse porch and keep chucker out there and piss your neighbors off. But yeah, just I would say the biggest advice is, yeah, making sure you either get your hands on birds or have somewhere to get birds, that because birds make a bird dog, and there's really no other way to simulate a bird contact for a bird dog without a bird. I mean, that's the only thing that you can't do inside, or, you know, you can't do on an off day and a shitty day in the weather, is you can't simulate bird contacts.
So when you're training, like, do you get dogs that have already been like on some birds to begin with, or are they mostly
I would say it's probably 50-50. 50% of people are probably like, you know, they take them out to a game farm or somewhere where they can buy a couple birds for their dog and put them on birds. But there's a big majority of people that, you know, they don't have access to birds, and that's why they send them to me, is because they don't have a place to put their dog on birds. So I could do it for them, and then a lot of them haven't had any bird contacts, and so when they see that first pigeon, it's like, sometimes, you know, there's some of them that'll be skittish of a pigeon, you know, they'll be kind of scared, they'll smell the pigeon and they don't know what that smell is, and it kind of they look at it weird, and then the wings start flapping, and it's a totally foreign thing that they've never seen before. So I'd say it's about 50-50.
So chasing this quail slam, how far along are you?
Oh, we're trying, man. So actually I shot everything but a mountain quail last year.
You got a valley?
I got a valley quail, yeah. I went to Idaho and shot a valley quail. We had a couple good days and made a couple of nice big piles of valley quail, actually. And then obviously shot bobs here in Nebraska, and then Arizona, I shot all three species you could shoot down there. So I'm really kicking myself for not just going and nutting up and just doing the whole thing all in one season, but I was driving extra like 6 or 8 hours further than what I already did and going to Western Oregon or California. I was like, this is good enough. So yeah, we're one away. I need the mountain quail, and I should have the quail slam done. So I would like to get that hunt done this next season, but I don't know. That's a long trip.
Yeah. You have to go to Western Oregon, and they have them in like Northern Cal, or
yeah. Yep.
Nothing in Washington State or anything.
I think they might. not positive. I know they have a small population in Western Idaho as well, but you can't hunt them in Idaho.
Yeah, it's kind of like our freaking chickens here. We can't hunt them.
Yeah.
Down north of town, Minnesota. It has to be by a lottery.
Really?
Drawing, yeah. Like, it's only residents only. So I was like, oh, I'll put in for like North Dakota or Minnesota chicken because, like, not very far from the in-laws farm, like a huge like chicken, like, yeah. They got WMA is set up for chickens.
Yeah, that's nice.
And pheasant forever, but no, found out you got to be a resident, and I was like, well, I'm not a resident anymore, so
dang,
that's fine. I'll chase pheasant sherpies and
right
Hans in North Dakota instead.
Yeah,
maybe they'd say go to chase the few pheasants that they have in Minnesota. Since they all want to come to North Dakota or South Dakota anyway to chase them. Yeah. Is Arizona the farthest you traveled to hunt then?
Yeah. I think that's like 20, it's like 21 hours from Omaha. So it's quite.
You had quit in the last season then too, because you really said you were just in Idaho.
Yeah, so
and Arizona.
I was living outside of Denver, so that kind of cut that trip like eight hours, and so yeah, we went to this last season. I did blue grouse, I did sage grouse up in Wyoming, and then I did South Dakota sharpies. I came back. Where else did I go? Went to Nebraska and did pheasant, quail. And then we went out to Idaho. We did Huns, Chucker, and Valley Quail out there.
Get any Chucker?
I didn't. I missed. I had two shots on one. Two shots on two different ones, I guess you should say. But One of them, I didn't really have a shot. It was a Hail Mary. The other one, I still to this day have nightmares. I sleep on it. It eats at me at night. Dog on point. I walk into the sagebrush flat and it just going away shot into the valley, and I just whiff all three. I'm like, oh my God.
So that's what they do say. You do it for fun the first time. The next time it's for revenge.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, we got to get back there for some revenge. But we did that. And then we came back. I did scalies in southern Colorado, which is pretty cool. We shot scaled quail down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they have a pretty decent population then.
Not a huge population. We definitely had to put some boots on the ground to find some, but I mean, once we got them pushed down into a small little wash, it was like just like in Arizona. It was popcorn flush, perfect shooting, great, awesome open shots. Just like, heck yeah, I'll take that. So yeah, we did Idaho and then we came back, and then I went down to Arizona for another 2 weeks this year and poked around down by the border and had some fun down there.
Let's say blue grouse, was that like first time targeting blues or?
Yeah. So never went after blues before then. Been elk hunting with my dad a handful of times and seen them out elk hunting and always thought, oh, this is going to be a super easy bird to kill. Like, I just need to bring my bird dog up here and do it. And then you bring your bird dog up there and you don't see him for 3 days. And it's like, great. But I mean, it was the first time I've ever targeted them. I'm not a huge fan of blue grouse hunting. If I probably honestly, like, it wants, like, my fiance wants to shoot one. And get just to say she shot one and, you know, check it off of her list, but I probably wouldn't go back and chase them. I think the only reason why I would do that. You say that again?
Did she shoot a sage grouse then when you guys were out there?
Yeah, she did. So She actually she had a blue grouse, had the chance to shoot one, and the sucker flew, I mean, on dog was on point, flew right up into a tree right in front of her, and she didn't pull the trigger. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, yeah, you kind of shit out of luck. I tried to scare that sucker off the tree for her for 15 minutes throwing a stick at it, and the thing wouldn't move. And I was just like, I don't know what to tell you. You're gonna, it's not your day today.
Because I remember, I think she posted a video of her missing sage grouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she walked up on point or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And she whiffed.
Yeah. Starts cussing right away.
Is she new to upland hunting then? Or yeah. Has she been?
So that's something that honestly that I take kind of a little pride in is just she's didn't hunt before she met me and didn't like camp, hunt, do any of the outdoors things at all, really. And so I introduced her to it just because I obviously love to do it, and she just, it hooked her. So now I got a person to follow around our own bird dogs together, and she loves to do it, and she loves to train the dogs and be a part of that, and she loves to camp and live outside just like I do. So it's pretty awesome to see her go from not knowing anything about bird dogs to now she's like looking out the truck window and going, hey, that looked like it would hold some birds, like, do you want to go walk this? Like, I'm like, okay, dang, babe, like, yeah that would hold some birds, let's go.
Be like, no I don't have to e-scout every place.
Right
taking some pressure off. I'll have to scout and drive.
Right. Yeah, no, she's been awesome. She's learned a lot, and like, it's been awesome to see her like really find a love for her. And she wants to go out every weekend and asking me, hey, are we going out this weekend, or hey, where are we going this weekend, instead of me trying to be like, hey, you want to go with me, or hey, you want to come tag along.
Right. So is she, who's the better shot?
Shit, I'd say when I first moved to Colorado, I was on the worst shooting slump of my life. I couldn't shoot a training bird out of the air. I mean, it was tough. So I would say we have our good and bad days. This season, she didn't shoot as good this season as she has in previous seasons, but shot more species than she ever has. So
is she also doing the quail slam?
Yeah, she's trying to. Yeah, she's like, I might as well. She's got, what does she got? She needs a valley and a mountain quail. But she shot all everything else.
She's like four species ahead of me. So
yeah. Yeah, she, it's nice because that Arizona trip, you can knock her out. Arizona or New Mexico, you can knock out three of them in one trip, you know?
Right. So. If you made a trip out of it, if you're us northerners, you would just hit a bob on the way home.
Yeah, you might as well hit a bob while you're here too. Yeah.
Yeah.
How far do you have to drive to even get in the closest quail?
Closest White? Quail would be either southern Iowa probably or southern Nebraska. So it'd probably be about 6-7 hours, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was on the list with my wife being pregnant and that, and getting like more pregnant as the season went on. I was just like, I don't know if I can. And nobody really wanted to do the trip with me, so it was like kind of like, whatever. I'll try to plan something next year.
Yeah.
Well, if you get I don't mind doing it by myself, but sometimes those 7-hour drives by yourself, like, I don't like doing that. I have to have at least somebody with me.
Yeah, I hear that.
So
you get a wild hare up your butt this year, you come sneak down here and I'll take you.
Well, if you're gonna be in Nebraska, I'll probably take you up on that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Show you some more short hairs.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. That'd be just another bird for them to shock off to. Is all they've had is the three we have here in North Dakota, and then sage grouse. So
yeah,
But surprisingly, like sage grouse didn't take. Like, I thought it was like going to be like a learning curve right away, like what are these? But it was right away. So they figured that out. So
yeah, mine were the same way. I didn't. It seemed like they didn't skip a beat on sage grouse. But the hardest one I've ever, the hardest bird I've hunted so far, I feel like it's just I've scalies have had my number. I cannot get. They just run to the end of the world, like everybody says, but
yeah, I hear they're worse
had than a pheasants. Tough time, like even finding them for the first like few hunts that I went on. I was burning 30 miles of boot leather before I was even running into a covey.
Yeah, I've heard the scalies can run more than the pheasants can.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you drive through the desert, you can see this little just running across, you just see little shadows just running across. I'm like, shh, they're just little missiles on the freaking desert yeah. land.
Yeah. Yeah. Pheasants, they're just, I still love chase pheasants. That's what hooked me in. I shouldn't say that. Rough grouse hooked me in at Uplands. And then I moved out of rough grouse country. But then yeah. pheasant hunting was always, when we'd always go west, like one trip a year with my family. We go out west of North Dakota, and that was like, I didn't have a dog until I got out of college, but we went out hunting every year for pheasants, and then we'd do a little bit around home. But yeah, that pheasants hooked me in, and then I got into the native birds, and it was like,
that's a
Huns are native, but the Sharpies are like, that's a blast.
Yeah,
once you figure out like hunt Sharpies and Huns, it's like pheasants are fun, like they do like our season, like you can hunt Sharpies all the way to the same, I think the same day as pheasant season ends too, but by usually November they're like
so flat. Wild
yeah. They're so wild, and like there's like could be 50 Sharpies in the group.
You're and never try sneaking
a dog close to 100 eyes, they're not gonna yeah. stink.
Right.
You might close your truck door and they're already taken off of the field. You're like, yeah, well.
Yeah, that's my experience with how my Sharpie hunt went this year, because I couldn't get out until 1st of November.
Right.
I would crest that hill and I would say, see ya.
This year was, I shot a three pack, like end of November or beginning of November. And the birds were all still like different coveys. So it was like three different coveys that day. And I took one from each one.
Like, yeah.
But I was like, for that late in the season, I've never had that. Like, that late in the season, I've taken birds like late in the season.
Yeah.
But it's been like big covey gets up and you get that one straggler. Like,
right.
Not
one young three, one.
Yeah. One young one that thought he could sneak by a dog. But yeah, no, once you do Sharpies, it's a blast. And eating them's good too. People say they're bad, but I'll die on that hill if they're not. Yeah, you just gotta learn how to cook them.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember my question. So we're going way back, we're backtracking now, Dutch.
Yeah.
Starting your own kennel, do you have anybody, like, do you have clients already lined up, or?
Yeah, I have a few clients that have already hit me up that now that they heard that I moved back, they want me to train their dogs, because they heard that I was training, and then I have a few family members that have hunting dogs that they're like, whenever you get your stuff up and running, you know, I'd be more than happy to send my dog to you. I'm obviously just looking to get my foot in the door right now. So I'm going to just take his whatever dog and whoever dog I can that and see honestly where it goes from there. It's kind of nice, cause I do have a full-time job that I can fall back on. You know, it's not like I'm life or death trying to train dogs for a living, but
right.
I could make a career out of it. It would be amazing. But, I have a full-time job that I make good money doing sprinkler work. It's not the end of the world.
You just doing sprinklers, or you guys do hardscapes at all? Or?
No, I do sprinklers, mainly sprinklers. Yeah.
If so, I'm glad we subcontract that all to Don with fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I see it when they have like gone into the backyards and they're doing it and to look at a job or something like that. And it's like, yeah, I'm glad we don't do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it pays well, you know, and the in-law, my fiance's dad, he owns a sprinkler company. My fiance's uncle owns a sprinkler company. So it's kind of nice. I got two decent sized companies that they own sprinkler companies that I can work for in town here. So nice. I can stay busy.
That's always good. You gotta stay busy.
Yeah.
The worst part is still when bird season comes and you're right. gonna want to go hunting and it's still busy. You're probably winding it down, but you're probably blowing sprinklers out.
Right. That's the thing is like we're trying to have everything blown out by like, you know, Halloween almost. So we have a few that we do after Halloween, but not much. And usually it freezes once or twice by then. So once we blow everybody out, I don't do anything but snow. So,
right. Yeah, I'm glad we don't do snow. Especially the snow we get. Like
right.
this year is the exception. I'm glad we don't do snow. But no, because we're bringing hauling ass trying to get all our projects done that were open or that we felt like said that they're going to be done this year by the first freeze, but we don't ever know, or not the first freeze, but like before snow falls.
Right.
Or the ground's too hard to freaking dig.
Start working, yeah.
Right. But like last year if we got that snowstorm at the end of October, we probably could have worked into December probably. Never got cold enough. It was cold enough at night, but
I mean, we're pulling, we started pulling sprinkler systems in the end of February here. Like the ground never froze, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think we had a bunch of frost, but like it was looking like we were going to have like an early start. And then we got like at 7 inches of snow. And now it looks like we're going to start early and starting in April for us is early. So,
yeah.
I suppose we're on a bird hunting podcast and we're talking trades. So, well, getting into the end of our podcast, we always got a few questions for our guests. You've already gone into favorite upland bird to hunt, obviously a quail. But what's your favorite quail species to hunt?
I would say probably a Mearns.
Mearns?
Yeah.
Just because of terrain or?
Yeah. Some about hunting quail in the mountains like that. I haven't mountain quail hunted yet, so maybe that will take the cake over a Mearns. But something about you're in the mountains and your dog goes on point, and then somehow this bird flies in between a gap of a tree like this, and it is like some of the hardest shooting you've ever seen. I mean, it's reminds me of like the videos of woodcock hunting. I've never woodcock hunted, but
yeah,
it can be like that where you're shooting in little small gaps of, you know, this and this.
And taking off the tree.
They're just zigzagging back and forth trying to get you to hit them. But yeah, some about the Mearns. And it's kind of cool that it's right, you know, it is like right down south, right off the border. It's, I don't know, something about it I like.
Sweet. Favorite bird dog? Can't be one you own.
Breed wise,
yeah. Sorry.
I have never had that question. I would probably say, I don't know if you've ever heard of them. It's a slick coat poodle pointer.
Yeah, I've actually hunted with two this year.
Yes, so it kind of looks like a short hair, but it's got the beard.
Yep. I'm going to say I can just pull up a picture of Greta. Greta's pretty slick coat. She's got a beard. But then my buddy's dog, Reaper, that's what he wanted was a slick coat. poodle pointer.
Yeah. I hadn't seen one until I started training this last season, this training season, and we had a client that brought one in, and I was like, man, you're a cool looking dog. Like,
yeah,
he looked exactly like my liver short hairs, except he had a beard.
Yeah, there's Greta.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And she's a good looking pup. That's she thinks she was 6 months at that picture. And then Reaper is pretty much the same age. I don't have a picture of Reaper. But Reaper, I hung with Reaper a couple times. Once when he was like 5 months old. And then once again when he was like towards in December. So he's probably 8 months old.
Yeah.
Hunting pheasants. But no, then I saw a video of him today and he was really ranging out looking for birds today. But yeah, he's got a slick coat too. I just got a little bit of beard, but
yeah, it's something about I'm not a huge like have dog fur everywhere. I mean, obviously with short hairs you have dog fur everywhere, but it's so small. I would probably stay away from like labs or wire hairs or anything like that, but something about them slick coats I like.
Yeah. Train many cockers then, or
a handful of them. Not a ton, but a handful, yeah. Nice. I'm not a huge cocker fan. I mean, I don't like them. I just don't know. I feel like I'm not a flushing dog type of guy right now.
Okay.
Like maybe in the future. Yeah, but right now I'm just so focused on like I'm still trying to learn pointing dogs as well. Like, you know, just like the niche of like everything that I'm like, I don't even want to deal with the flusher yet.
Right. You just want to get your base
with right.
the pointing dogs on.
Right.
Then try to go poodle pointer. I think that's the first one. I think that first answer we've had a poodle pointer. Everybody's always, well.
Everybody wants a cocker, huh?
No, everybody's, it's been, last one was Boykins.
Okay.
But no, usually it's wire hair, short hair,
yeah,
some popular, or setter. The setters are cool dogs, but I'll get my hands on one day. I still got to hunt with one before I decide if I actually want to deal with taking birds out every hunt.
Yeah,
yeah. All right, what's the kind of a two-part question? Gun you're shooting right now, and what's your like wish list gun?
Oh boy, gun I'm shooting now is the gun that I pull out of the truck because I own too many.
That's not a bad problem.
The past couple years, I've been getting into sub gauges, so I like shooting a 16 gauge. I did just buy a, what is it? It's A5. What is it? An ultimate A5. Yeah. An ultimate 16 gauge A5. So it's like a special edition. It's got the engraving on it. It's a pretty badass looking gun. I waited like 4 or 5 months. I bought it and waited like 4 or 5 months for it to get sent to me. And then I shot that quite a bit this year. I really like shooting that gun. I do have a over under 16 gauge. And then I have a over under 20. My fiance shoots an over under 20. And then I have like a few duck, like 12 gauges, like Remington A70s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'd say that A5 is probably a 16 gauge A5. I love shooting that. And it's as light as the paperclip. The thing is, I've never felt it again. That's that light.
That's my dream gun right there. A5, but like an old school A5.
Yeah. Yeah. See, this one's the new one. So it's not as cool, but. It looks cool.
They're still a cool gun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm the same way as you though. Like if I could ever find a 20, I would really like to find a 20 gauge.
They just came out with a 20 gauge, like a new kind.
Yep, yep. if I could find an older 20 gauge and an A5, I would love to do that. But the older ones,
Benelli in for,
they're so heavy, dude. I don't know if you've picked one up. They're so heavy.
Yeah, I picked one up.
It's just like, why would I even want to own this thing?
I like my sub gauges right now. So I've been contemplating trading in one of my 12 gauges. I was like, I just don't use it anymore. And I like my double guns too. So
yeah, I'm the same way. I got like three or four 12 gauges that I literally haven't shot in 2 or 3 years. I'm like, maybe I should just take them all in at once and trade in for one cool sub gauge.
Right. Yeah. I was like, well, I just want, maybe I'll just trade in, just trade straight up for like a entry, like a side by side that I can beat the shit out of and not feel bad.
Yeah. I really have been looking at the 28 gauge Ethos.
You have. My buddy Joel shoots a 28 gauge Ethos. Pretty slick looking gun. Well, he's got three Ethos, so.
Nice.
He's got one pretty much every gauge besides 16 and 20 or 16 and 410.
Yeah.
But yeah, I carry that 410 around too every once in a while. Just for shits and gigs.
Yeah, that'd be
fun. I got an old side by side 410. There's no chokes. It's got smooth bores. It was my first gun that I got, like after a pellet gun. So, yeah,
that's badass though.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody's like, oh, you got skipped the 22 and went right into the 410. I was like, well, no, I think mom and dad felt a little bit more comfortable about giving me a 410
right
instead of a 22.
Yeah.
But no, I took that out a couple times this year, and I was really trying to get a rooster with it because I got Huns and a Sharpie with it this year. And then, like, there's one time it was actually a YouTube video with a guy, and he has it all on YouTube. And Riggs pointed three big roosters all separate in this little cattail slough, probably the size of like 20 yards by 20 yards, maybe, like cattail slough. Just a little tiny little slough out in the middle of the field next to a big one. And each one of them I was like I could have gotten three man or just a one limit with my freaking 410
regular gun. Yeah,
I was like, yeah, but I'd already shot my limit, so I was just having fun out there just watching him work. But
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. All right, favorite place you've been to hunt?
Oh, I would probably say Arizona, just because I love hunting quail, and there's three different types of quail species you can shoot down there. But it's just so far, so I don't know if it's my favorite place. But I really like hunting in Nebraska too. Like, there's just, yeah. I mean, there's four different species. Quail, you got quail, and then obviously you have pheasant and you have sharp tails when you can get out and it's not 100 degrees in September.
Right.
I mean, worth it to go out and chase sharp tails. So I'd say either Arizona or Nebraska is my favorite place to hunt.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like that too. I feel that question. And I say it's tough to beat the home state because I'm leaving birds to go shoot.
Right, right. Kids. I'm driving by some of the best bird countries to go.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I'm leaving. That's like I've gotten asked to go to Montana or something like that, pheasant hunting. Or I was like, why would I do that when I have to drive by like one of the best pheasant hunting, public land pheasant hunting in the world?
Right, right, yeah. No, there's something about hunting in the home state that I can always appreciate for sure.
Right. Gotta appreciate the good years too. So
yeah.
What's on the horizon for you guys this next season? You guys getting married this next season too, or?
We don't have a date yet. So I don't think it's gonna be this next season. And it definitely will not be in hunting season. So
mine worked out great for that because my wife's dad's a farmer, so couldn't have it during fall, which worked out great. And
yeah,
and we thought we're pushed far enough away that we got rid of planting season, but that year we had a late spring, so they're still planting.
We don't have a date yet, so we don't definitely won't happen this year, but I would love to, like I was saying, finish the quail slam if I could. I don't know if I'm going to be able to. I'm a pretty spur of the moment guy, and I don't really plan much until like a week or two away, or you know, a month at max. So I don't really know any of my like hunting plans or hunting trips until, you know, right before usually they happen. But that's also kind of why, like when we closed the kennel down this last year, I just took off November, December, and January, and I didn't work. And so I basically was just at the mercy of myself. And I'd leave for 14 days and come back and check in on the fiance and make sure that the ranch was still in one piece. And then I'd take off again and didn't really have any anything I was chasing in particular. I was just kind of riding by the seat of my pants, you know.
So it's not like you're living the dream there for
it's a grind. I mean, especially when shit starts going wrong, like your truck and stuff like that, but don't get me wrong, it's fun. But I'd say
I just started renting a truck, who's
right
mine at home.
Yes, renting a U-Haul.
I've never had a problem with my truck when I've gone. Actually, I take that back. I had a misfire last year or 2 years ago, but I still drove it all the way home.
Yeah. I would like to get a mountain quail knocked off. I don't know if it's going to happen, though. But I would like to just keep all my dogs healthy, hopefully. That's the main thing. Keep all the dogs healthy and not have any crazy vet visits. Always running.
You have any crazy vet visits last year? Or?
I did porcupine once. No. That I couldn't. I was, and when it happened 30 minutes before dark. And I was starting to head back to the truck, but like I was still 2 miles away from my truck. And it happened. And she went in it and she did it good. And all down the back of her throat. I'm like, bro, you've done this 2 or 3 times already. And the worst part was I watched two sharp tails pitch into this one like cedar tree on the side of this hill. And I'm like, I wonder if I could like sneak up on the backside of this hill and get to that cedar and actually get these burns pinned down. And she got to that. She got about 50 yards away from that cedar, went on point, and I'm like, here we go. I'm like, no shit, she's gonna let me walk all the way up here. Got all the way, I mean, I got 20 yards from the cedar and I looked down in this little hole and the porcupine moves a little bit, and it was all she wrote. She just went in, picked that sucker up and tried to bring him right to my foot, and I'm like, dude, that's not what we're hunting.
No reaction, just picked it up. And
yeah, I mean, she picked it up and then once she realized, you know, she's like, oh shit, that I'm not supposed to. I'm like, are you kidding me? She laid down and started rolling. Oh, you know, have you ever ran into a porcupine?
I have ran into a porcupine, but my dog didn't do anything with him. So
yeah, it's dude. So they'll just start.
But like, I got two skunks.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, well, 4 years. So like, 4 years.
She'll like lay down and like they're just pawing at her mouth trying to get all the quills out. I'm sure I posted the picture of her when she got into it on my Instagram, but it was this last year was way uglier than the one before. But
yeah, knock on wood, I'm sure I'll run into it sometime. But
yeah,
I hope I don't.
It's a pain. It's a pain for sure. And then it was almost dark, and I got her back to the truck and picked out as many as I could, but I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to pick all these out by myself. And I didn't have any light. So I ended up having to go into Pier and stop at getting an emergency vet visit and sedate her and do the whole nine.
That was a spendy one, I bet.
Yeah.
Just for the emergency vet visit.
Yeah.
I've only had one of those, and that was because the dog ate a tampon. So.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Oh, and the only emergency vet is in Fargo. So I had to drive an hour.
Dang.
All for them. I live an hour north, a little over an hour north in Grand Forks from Fargo. Okay. So
yeah,
it's just straight down the interstate. But boy, I go all the way there and we drop them off and they're like, yeah, we're going to get them to throw up and whatnot. And like, if we have to do anything else, we'll call you. So we're like, well, we left supper at home. So like, well, it's Applebee's was right next to the vet clinic. And we literally dropped him off and we got in our car and we're just going to go right over to Applebee's. Or I think we walked right over there. Maybe we walked over there and it took us, you know, 5 minutes. And just walking in the door and they're like, yeah, Riggs is up and good. We got it out. I was like,
kidding.
Okay. I was like, we drove all that way. And then it was not as bad as I expected it to be, but it was still like $300. So
yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, it was $250 for exam fee.
Yeah. Those vets, man, I have to have a savings account just for fat visits. That's for sure.
I thought about, I got a discount through work for insurance. So I don't have to, like, it's.
Yeah. I've heard of people starting to do that. It's getting insurance and it's smart.
Yeah. Because I was like, if the deductible is $250, I'd be like, well, shit, any emergency vet visit's going to be $250. Oh,
yeah.
So
way more than that, yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, I think it was because I think that probably covered an accident coverage, maybe. I have no clue what it would cover. If a porcupine would be an accident.
Yeah, I don't know.
It wouldn't be in a wellness, so.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I think like $10 a month. I was like, you know, that's not like a bad idea.
Yeah.
To like keep it on them at least during hunting season.
Yeah.
Well, Jared, where can, closing up on this episode, where can people find you on social media? You have a kennel page and everything or not?
I don't have a kennel page. I just got my personal Instagram, the Upland Bum or Upland Bum. I have Facebook. I don't really post that much on it. So, I mean, you can find me on Facebook, but don't do a crazy amount there. And, but basically just use Instagram and just post all my personal dogs and any training videos or kennel videos. I'll post there too. So
nice. Well, there you have it. Appreciate you coming on and
I appreciate you, my man. Whenever you, want to come down to Nebraska and kill some quail or pheasant, you let me know.
They will.